All right. If you all can talk.
Hi, this is Chris Long coming to you live from East Lansing, Michigan State University.
We are good. We have a recording running in the background. All right. So it's official. The Rube Goldberg machine that was built by Alan Levine is in effect. We are on DS106 Radio, and I am going to take a moment now and introduce my guests. I'm looking on a peer in. Thank you, Kristen, for getting us on a peer in. And we're doing this from a peer in, so actually that's kind of a new thing. We were trying Skype and we jumped out of it because it wasn't working for all of us, and that's kind of cool. So we got a new thing. So anyway, I'll start. On my lower, below me, on the screen in a peer in is Scott. Scott Shupri, is that correct?
Shupri,
almost. I even asked him before. All right. Scott, and you run, if I'm right, the research. So if I'm being – hold on one second. I do have it right here. I should check my notes. You're the Assistant Dean for Academic and Research Technology at Michigan State. Is that correct?
In the College of Arts and Letters, yep.
Absolutely. So, yeah, there's – you guys are so big and I'm not used to this that I have to actually qualify everything with the College of Arts and Letters because there's so many other schools. Is that right?
We have a lot of colleges, but if you say Michigan State, we're all good.
Okay, good. And Kristen Mapes, who's the coordinator for Digital Humanities. How are you, Kristen?
I'm good, thanks.
Very good. And you're, I have to assume, at the College of Arts and Letters, too. Right?
Yes.
And you guys refer to that as CAS, is that right?
As Cal.
Cal. Why did I say Cal?
There's another college called College of Communication Arts and Sciences, and they go by CAS.
See? Yes. Immediately I'm in trouble.
I have partners, of course.
And Chris Long, you are now officially a dean at Michigan State University. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And for that, as I can see in a peer-in, they give you like a paneled office.
Yes. It comes with a peer-in, and then somehow I manage to translate that into real life.
That's awesome. So I'm actually really excited. I want to thank you all for taking the time in your busy schedules to sit down and talk with me. I am excited because I've been following kind of the work you all have been doing, not only for the last year or two since you've been playing with domains and then getting a domains kind of domain of one's own at MSU, but I think the history goes even a little longer because at Mary Washington, when we started Domain of One's Own 2012, 2013, the only other real parallel going on was the work Chris Long was doing. That's you, Chris. I don't mean to refer to you as if you're not here. At Penn State with graduate students. Do you want to speak a little bit about like how you all at Penn State came to the Domain of One's Own idea roughly at the same time that we did at Mary Washington and what was going on, what was possibly in the water at that moment?
Well, I think partly what was in the water was Twitter and me following you and learning from you and of course loving Virginia Woolf and loving the idea of a room of one's own and also thinking about how we could translate the idea of performing your scholarly presence online to build community around your work. Nothing better than talking about, you know, a domain of your own, a space of your own, that where you could install what you wanted to do the kind of work you needed to do. So I, you know, the idea was great. We didn't really have the platform for it that you have at Reclaim and that you had at Mary Washington that you developed. So that was a that had always been a challenge for us. We were just kind of, we had a bunch of iterations of, you know, instances of WordPress, and we tried to do a bunch of different things for those who wanted other kinds of installs. But the principle was, I mean, you and I were on the same page from the beginning, and I definitely credit you with the vision of having that that model. And it's just, but it fit really within my own sense of how I was trying to live my life online out loud in a scholarly way that built in both my scholarly presence, my teaching presence, and my also my presence as a person, as a father, and as a husband, and just a person interested in photography and other things. So
it's interesting to me because one of the things that when I first started following your work, which is 2008, 2009, is you were a fellow at PSU working to build, I mean, it seemed like an early instance of this idea that you've really blown up at MSU now, of this online scholarly presence. And one of the things I really want to talk to you about is you guys produced an amazing video that was thoughtful but yet to the point about what a domain means, this kind of, you know, what's, it's kind of the web. It's not, it's, I say it all the time, it's trailing edge technology. We're not pretending this is anything special, right? But it's still extremely powerful, right? In terms of applications, open source. And you really, at MSU in general, and I'll say you, but I mean probably the community you're working with there, has a beautiful kind of frame for it, this idea of digital online presence and academic presence. Can you speak a little bit about what that means for you philosophically and actually on the ground with faculty and how they've responded to it?
Yeah, Scott will remember this. I, you know, when I came in as dean, I said, okay, here's what we got to do. We got to get in contact with Jim Groom, and we got to do this Reclaim hosting, because I didn't really have the leverage at Penn State, you know, in the position that I was to do that. And then we have to, then I thought we had to model it, because what we're talking about here is the cultivation of habits and putting into practice certain principles of being public and engaging online that are not easy to learn for anyone, and that are important to learn for everyone, and in particularly, I think, for the faculty who really have a responsibility to know how to do it, even as because they have to teach students about what it means to be online in a responsible way, to appear in public as a full self, and to enrich the conversations that we're having, and to create community around the work that we're doing, and to open up a space for the serendipity that sometimes happens when you put your work out there. And then also to be very practical about it. That's where Kristen and Scott have really taken it to a whole nother level with respect to, you know, how do you move from this sort of ideal and this principle of living a scholarly life online in a nuanced and thoughtful way to helping people understand why that might be important, and, you know, what the different dimensions of it are. For me, I've just been having so much fun learning how to do it as the web grew up around me that, you know, it's easy to forget that you have to think about, you know, why are we doing this? We do this every day. I mean, I was in the Dean's Council meeting yesterday with all the deans, and we were talking with communication and brand strategy, and they're talking about their social media strategy. And I said, you're talking about cultivating conversations. If we as deans aren't on there having real conversations through these media, it's never going to be authentic and genuine. It's just going to be this kind of, you know, broadcast marketing, which is not compelling at all. So I'll stop there, and maybe Scott and Kristen could talk a little bit about how we've operationalized it.
But I like the idea of walking the walk, right? Like, so obviously you have a vision, but you walk the walk, and it's a nice transition. And Scott, I think a lot of this might be the work you started doing, because when we talked earlier about getting domains, right, you were the point person. And I don't know if we discussed this, but what I often think is without support, without a structure in place, domains sounds great, and we can talk about digital literacies and people getting a presence and digital identity and, you know, till the cows come home. But if they don't have people on the ground helping, then that doesn't mean anything. And I actually subscribe to a mailing list at MSU. And what I know, how I know, keep my pulse on what you all are doing, is you are sending out regularly these amazing emails about, you know, 3-4 days of workshops for anyone who's interested. So I'd love to hear more about exactly what Chris said, how you operationalized it, and what does it mean on the ground at Michigan?
Yeah, So we were thinking about this. One of the things that was kind of funny when Chris first came and he talked about we have to talk to Jim, we have to get Domain of One's Own, is we had been thinking about this for a while and thinking about how to support it, but support it with the infrastructure that we had at MSU. And that actually proved to be that was actually the large hurdle for us that was keeping us from being able to do these pieces that we're doing now. So one of the things I think is that we had been thinking about this and we had been planning in these areas of, you know, giving faculty an opportunity for a web presence, giving them the opportunity to play with new technologies, new things, you know, particularly things, open source things that might give them the opportunity to teach in new ways. But we didn't really have a great way, easy way for them to get signed up for it and to be able to use it. And so I think in a lot of respects, a lot of the groundwork was done in kind of struggling with this internal infrastructure that all of a sudden domains made it very easy for us to take that and move forward. So, you know, we started with this idea of a half day workshop to bring on board our new users. And so Kristen and myself and Bill Hart Davidson, our associate dean for research, we put together this half day event, and half of the half day we talk, and Kristen can talk about this because it's a lot more her area, but we talk about just establishing that digital presence. What does that mean? What does it mean to live and be a kind of a, we use the visitor and resident example of that. What does it mean to be a resident on the web and to do things and live it and walk the walk and talk the talk? And then I come in and the second half of that, and we started building them out and sending them away with, you're signed up with Domain of One's Own, you have your space, we've helped you install a WordPress site to get you started. And so that's really kind of the beginning point for a lot of our faculty with it. And then we offer, as you mentioned, Jim, our graduate assistant coordinates a lot of workshops that are opportunities for them to people. So a lot of people will attend this 3-hour workshop and then they will go off to do the things that they do in their kind of normal academic life, and then will forget, how do I even log into this place? So one of the things that Maddie, our graduate assistant, has been really instrumental in this semester is she holds almost weekly workshops that are an opportunity to come in. And if you feel like you're starting from scratch, she starts from scratch and we build it back up. We connect you back in. We help you get ready. And I was just at one of the workshops last week, and it was this great mix of people who were, you know, very well versed in it and were there just simply in case a question came up that they needed to ask, and other people that were starting very much new to it. And so we combine those pieces with another piece, which is our Digital Presence and Public Scholarship Fellows program. So that runs every semester. We've taken on 20 people in the fall semester and about 20 people this spring. Kristen and I co-lead that with Lee Graves Wolf from the College of Education and Steve Thomas from the College of Natural Science. And it's a weekly meeting. We have a little bit of a kind of academic-y type feel to it for the first couple weeks to get everyone thinking and working toward their digital presence. And then we do a lot of co-working sessions toward the end of that, where we focus on topics that have come up during the week, maybe through the news or through conversation with one another. In fact, Kristen just led the one today, so I wasn't there, so I don't actually know what topics came up this morning, but I guess I'll let Kristen talk a little bit about the digital presence piece of it, because I think that's the area where she brings a lot of real thought to it for us as far as merging some of those ideas that Chris is playing with and some of the technical pieces, along with really thinking about your scholarly profiles and your life as a digital scholar. So.
Yeah, so I mean, that even goes back to those 3-hour workshops that we give about once a semester, and even since the beginning of when we gave the very first one, where we introduce people to Reclaim, but we also pair that with thinking about these issues of online scholarly presence and your digital scholarship, but also we introduce people to setting and get them set up with the Reclaim account, but also with a Google Scholar account, and make sure that they have been able to claim their presence in Google Scholar, as well as with an ORCID unique identifier for researchers. And so we think about this not only as your online presence, as in your website, but also what are the other places where you have an online presence. So in those introductory things, we think about sort of the two core ones as a scholar that you should be kind of claiming so that people can find your work. But then when we get into these conversations, especially with the fellows over the longer semester length timeframe, we put it in the context of what are the other places where you sort of operate online, and how are you choosing and how are you motivated to interact with any of those? Because some people in their scholarship might be more interested in becoming active on Twitter, perhaps, and some might be more interested in becoming active on Instagram, especially artists, perhaps. But some people might have other places that they want to engage with. So we talk about these things kind of holistically. And Scott mentioned this digital visitor and resident model, which is something that we like to start off with, is thinking about what types of things do you use? Where do you see yourself sort of living, quote unquote, online? Where are the social traces that you leave? Maybe at the coming into the semester long fellowship program, they have never thought about the social traces that they leave in all sorts of different places, with maybe past WordPress sites or Weebly sites that they've made, or who knows what else, and all sorts of different things they've played with in the past. But how can we bring some intentionality to what they do? And then how can we use the site that they've created, you know, we're having them create these WordPress sites through Reclaim. How can they use that as the central portal through which they can express themselves in these other places? So thinking of it as the place they can always refer back to, from Twitter, from Google Scholar, from Facebook, from wherever, so that they can take ownership over it, which is really kind of the point of setting that up.
What's super cool about what you're saying, and actually two things. I mean, one of the things, I had no idea that on top of the workshops you were doing full-blown seminars where you were bringing 20 fellows in, which I think is such a brilliant model to focus and co-work. But Kristen, as you're mentioning this notion of like what Ken Lane and Audrey Waters, when they were first talking about this notion of reclaim your domain, one of the things they mentioned is do an inventory of just where you are now, like, and put it in a spreadsheet. And then from that, figure out all your presence. And the idea of starting it like that and building on top of it, this idea of the presence, is actually something we're not inventing here in this workshop. Like, this is a practical reality that you have to kind of, no one wants to, because no one wants to figure out all the passwords. But like, that's really the...
We talk about LastPass and things like that. We talk about if this, then that, all sorts of these things. But yeah, I mean, and I will pitch or point out to the model that we use. The spreadsheet thing is interesting as sort of an inventory. I honestly think some people might be actually intimidated by that exercise because spreadsheets. But the model we use is actually a mapping model. So it's called Digital Visitor in Residence, and this is something that's been funded by JISC and by OCLC. So it's a joint project among several folks within the US and in the UK. And so there's basically, you take a big piece of paper and you draw like a Cartesian coordinates, basically, and you have a spectrum of visitor and resident modes of engagement, and then you have a spectrum of personal and professional. And so we have people, we pass out markers and a whole bunch of post-its, and you can basically like mark out where you see yourself. And so it's the physicality of that is actually a different way of thinking about it, which sometimes is surprising to people when we're here to talk about a digital thing. Yeah. But let's step back and think about how we like mentally map ourselves in a way. And that actually is something that throughout, as we've been doing this over the semester, it's been interesting to see people sort of pull their map out weeks later and refer to it as they're trying to figure out how they want to bring things together, et cetera. So, yeah.
And it's a lot more three-dimensional than, say, like you said, a spreadsheet. These are the things I have. No, this is actually a course of an axis.
Exactly. So it's not just thinking about like where you have accounts, but how you use them. And maybe, and one of the things that we sort of introduced is, which we can't really include in that physical thing, but an element of time or aspiration, if you will, of maybe right now with Twitter, I'm just using this as an example. Somebody might say, I'm really engaging more as a visitor with Twitter right now because I just go there and I see what people are doing, but I don't ever really tweet and I don't feel comfortable with that. But maybe I want to get there. So that maybe I want to be someone who tweets at conferences, but I don't know how I want to tweet otherwise, perhaps. So we can think about, I'd love to find a way to think about how to incorporate that in, like physically or visually, but that's something that the fellows have been thinking about. Like, where do I want to go over the course of the time here or just in the longer term? How does that fit in with the online presence that I have with my website versus with the other kind of spokes coming out of it from the other places there I am online?
And I found it just last week, we went back to these maps as we, I think we're in what week, maybe week 12 this semester. So we're heavily co-working with the fellows. And I brought back up last week, I brought up our folder because we have a shared drive with all of the maps on it for everyone. You can go back, you can look at your own, you can look at everyone else's that's chosen to share it with the group. I brought those back up, and it was really great to see everyone kind of talk about where they had moved across it. In fact, and we had one person, we have a couple of fellows who were in the fall cohort who have joined us all spring. And one of them was, during the fall, they said, I will absolutely never use Twitter. Twitter was, it was very far in the personal and visitor category. And they came in last week and they said, well, I did my first tweet yesterday. And, we worked with graduate students and I did it because I felt like I needed to amplify some of my scholarship at a conference that I was at and get the word out there. And that was, a really good example of how this program supports people at any part of the entry. We have a joke that says also that you can't go from zero to CP long in one session, or even in 15. So it's a way of bringing people in at the level that they're ready to engage. And with the spaces that they're ready to engage in, and then building off that over time.
Can I ask you this? Because when we were at Mary Washington, and I think they're still doing it, but when we were doing it 2013, we did a very similar thing. Like, we brought faculty in, we had faculty workshops, we read some, like, you know, we maybe Dana Boyd or some other pieces about identity, and then we would mix in, like, here's how you build it. And one of the pushbacks I always got was, you know, some people took to it, and when they took to it, like, people who didn't take to it were like, well, that's great because you're a natural self-promoter, right? Like, that's how it always came out. Like, sure, you like this because you're, and so it was always that balance between how you don't frame social media and the other stuff happening as self-promotion. And I think we've seen an interesting year in the following year because whether or not you like these tools, you realize that this is about geopolitical power and everything else. So I just wonder, like, do you get some of the frames around what's the fine line when you're talking about online digital presence between self-promotion and between academics? And is that something that comes up, or have you already, like, cracked that nut and be like, no?
Maybe I could say one quick thing. You can all amplify it in different ways. But one of the things Kristen mentioned was getting your scholarly identity in line through ORCID and ResearchGate, all this other stuff. And so I put my dean's hat on and just said, this has been really important from my perspective because there's a lot of analytics that are going on behind the scenes that are capturing our faculty's work now that they've gone through this program and have IDs and are curating their scholarly publications through these tools that are actually elevating the reputation of the college. I thought this was very low hanging fruit for us. Just if we could just be more intentional about getting our stuff out there. So yes, I don't think that's what you mean by self-promotion, but there is a dimension of very strategic thinking about how are you getting your work out there? Where are you, we want you not only to be published, but to be read. And then we want that to lead to awards, and we want you to lead that to lead to citations. So that's all part of this.
You might be my favorite dean ever.
Well, I would chime in that this actually jives a lot with the way that Bill Hart Davidson introduces all of this at the beginning of our workshops, is the idea that this is your path to leadership in your field. So the point is, and some of what Chris was just saying about, we don't want you to just publish, but we want you to be read, is the point of being an intellectual is to have some sort of impact. And that impact is going to look different for whoever we are. And since we're, especially we're working with faculty, we're working with academic specialists, we're working with people in theater and people in philosophy. And so there's different goals and different ideas about what that looks like, which is partly why talking about a web presence actually provides a lot more flexibility than simply thinking about, you know, paper cited or whatever. But the point is to make an impact. And so being public about that allows you to make an impact more easily than not being public about it. And that's the perspective I take as well, is, I mean, that, and I'd also pair it with, for me at least, when I talk to people who might be hesitant about not wanting to be self-promotive, is that this actually gives you a window into a community. Now, I'm in digital humanities, and I come from that community is especially online, yeah. But I am also a medievalist, and there's all sorts of medieval studies folks who people outside of the field might be surprised are online having these productive conversations in a variety of places, and I get to be part of that because I've chosen to be there.
Yeah. That, and that anybody can be exactly there. The point that we've been trying to amplify is that this is not about broadcasting, it's about community building. It's about nurturing communities through words and images and through communication in this very digitally mediated way. I mean, now I look at, you know, this is the first time you and I, Jim, have talked face-to-face, if we can consider this face-to-face.
Yeah,
I think
totally.
Probably ever, right? So, but you know, your person, yourself, I have, you know, been engaged with, you know, for a long time as somebody through Twitter and through various mentions and conversations. And the insights that I've gained from you and from your work have really impacted my own work. And that's the kind of community that we want to create. And so that when you get to start seeing it at the local level, now that I can amplify the work of my faculty through Twitter or link to their website, and then I see them on campus and I can say, wow, what a great essay you wrote. What an amazing award you won. What a terrific video you produced. That's enriching the whole experience. And it's also, of course, instrumentally valuable in the sense of trying to elevate reputations and things. But to me, it's always been about the community, the ability to build an academic community.
I'm sold. Totally. I'm sorry, Scott.
Oh, no. What I was going to say is I think I'd add, too, for me, one of the biggest things is this element of reflective practice and being a reflective practitioner. And especially for me as someone who both does educational research, but very much focuses on an applied area of that, it's very important for me to be reflective in the work that I'm doing. And as I see the faculty kind of working on their work, I see that work being strengthened through not only that scholarship that they're doing to publish, but the reflection that happens around that and the questions that they're struggling with in terms of, you know, where do I put this in public spaces and what does that mean and how do I feel about that?
It's in between the three of you. I mean, it's beautifully framed and triangulated in some ways around not only the reflective practice, but what it means, like you said, with digital humanities and being online there is just part of the discipline now. Like you can't really even distinguish it from your academic work. And I'm interested very much in how you make that, because I think the argument you all are making comes down to this notion of not broadcasting, community building. And one of the things that we're challenging on, this is a personal challenge and a challenge I've had since UMW and going forward with Reclaim or whatever, is how do you all imagine aggregating and making that visible for, and you have a very interesting situation, for the college, right? Like you want to be able to say, yes, we're doing amazing work. And the next step would be like, and here is a place on our site or a dedicated domain where you can see the work. Like one of the things we did at UMW early on, 2009, is we basically said, we have this thing that comes out twice a year, which is a print paper about what everyone had done academically. Published books, articles, presentations, and people had to submit to it by a day. And then that was the one for 6 months, and then another one by a day. And so we basically said, why isn't this a weekly newsletter that faculty themselves can submit to? And that became what was the, you know, it was called the Eagle Eye. Every week, a new vision of what was happening. And the idea was, we want to know the life of the mind of Mary Washington as seen in a week view. Do you guys imagine that what you're doing with domains is maybe a stepping stone to something like that? And it's not, you know, as you all have said, it's not limited to a website or WordPress or a domain per se. It's about them having a presence out there that you all can help them aggregate and promote. Do you have a vision for that that would build on what you're already doing?
One thing we talk about in our sessions, and I try to do as I go through my academic work and even administrative work, is, you know, no scholarly activity without a digital artifact. So that means you have to take a picture, you have to do something, and you have to have something that you can put on your website that shows this is kind of what you've done. As not just, I mean, it's great for history, but it's also just to keep people kind of informed about where you're going, and opening up the possibility for the serendipity that sometimes can come when somebody who you didn't even expect might be interested in this, it turns out to be interested and also has some great things to contribute. But one of the things that I'm noticing now in my role as a dean, and in this, which is in a kind of particular place in the university structure, which is a very exciting and sometimes daunting place, is also we're beginning to leverage the signals of the MSU brand, and particularly the marketing and brand strategy, which is a very good unit here on campus, a very thoughtful one, a very strategic one. And our efforts here really dovetailed beautifully with the land grant mission of Michigan State University. It did also with Penn State's land grant mission, which is, you know, advance knowledge, transform lives by making knowledge public and making it accessible. And having, as Kristen so nicely said, making sure that it has an impact. And then talking about the impact of that work. So, one aspect here is an institutional commitment to public education and being public. And the other thing I would say is, you know, Scott and Kristen, and we talked about other partners around campus, Lee Wolf and others. We've got so many creative people who get it. And once you can get the critical mass of them together, it's like, wow, it's amazing.
Are you getting any pushback? So you're saying it's working beautifully in terms of the marketing frame, that MSU obviously has a marketing branch, and the idea of saying, like, hey, yeah, we have marketing. It's called the smart people doing the work on the ground to share their stuff far and wide. So that's something sitting fairly comfortably with the marketing folks, because we hear from a lot of other schools that once they hear about a domain, one of the first things they think about is, you know, they'll see the big board, right? Like the marketing, like how does that work there?
Well, okay, I will be candid. I don't know. Scott, you should just start going cut on YouTube if I'm saying something too much.
This tape has been lost.
It's been a great conversation with our communication and brand strategy group, because Heather Swain, who's the vice president for communication and brand strategy, has got a really sophisticated idea of brand as the spirit of the place.
Nice. That's awesome.
Just to put it in a tweetable term, you know. But what that means is that she's interested in amplifying the work that's being done on the ground. Where we get into some interesting conversations and some very candid ones, and we've had these conversations, is I say, look, I'm a faculty member. I'm brand, if we want to talk brand, CP Long, that's my brand, okay? You're going to find me all over the web that way. Whether I'm at Penn State, it's going to be CP Long. Whether I'm at Michigan State, that's going to be CP Long. Now, am I happy to amplify the signal of Michigan State University and integrate it into who I am? Absolutely. Am I ready to put that on my website? Absolutely. Can you give me assets I can integrate into my, you know, into my web presence? Beautiful. I'm all about it. But if what you want me to do, and if the only way you want me to be online is through a template that you create that allows me to do this, this, or this, then we have a problem with my ability to live my own academic life out loud. And by the way, you want me to do that because that's going to be the authentic signal that you want to amplify yourself and show what's happening in Michigan State. They've been very open to that idea. But we also have people at various levels of investment in this. And some people, they need a landing page. You know, they need, they're big name people who don't have a web presence, but the newspaper's calling and CBS is calling, you know, 60 Minutes is calling. They want to talk and we need a space. So we have to spin that up in a very professional way too. So there's, there are these levels and these interesting conversations that have to happen.
Yeah. And I'll say that we get this coming from the kind of university sometimes saying, or people within it who might not realize, like, get the whole that this is the person's brand and that through that, the university and the college is lifted up. But also sometimes faculty, they're sort of surprised when we say, no, this is your space and you are in charge of it. And if you move, it moves with you. And sort of that's a revelation a little bit. And they don't always, sometimes I get skeptical looks like, are you sure that that you're, are you lying to me right now? And so the fact that we're really actually giving it to them and showing them how to use it and walking them through how to think about it, but also that it is something that they own and that they take is, seems to be somewhat of a revolutionary sort of idea.
Exactly.
That it's very sort of exciting to be able to surprise people in that way.
The fact of the matter is it's this commitment to the principle that your academic vision for your research should drive the kind of space that you have, what you install in it, and the way you present yourself is at the heart of this. And then there's a trust that says you are doing great things. Our job is to empower you to do that great thing and bask in the glory of your success when it happens, and be confident enough that you're going to stay here because you can do just that. We're letting you do that, you know, whereas another place you might go might not be letting you do that. And so that becomes a strategic advantage for us if we can get it the right way.
And brilliantly built into the idea of the public education, public land grant. I've seen you do that several times on Twitter, and I just think it's a brilliant marriage.
Well, the idea of the land grant is brilliant, so it's easy to surf that one. It's awesome.
Yeah, and to kind of build on what Chris and Kristen just said, that portability of it being your own, that you move with you. So I've been working for a long time with faculty on and off with digital presence back. I was at the College of Education at MSU prior to coming to Arts and Letters. And on the technical side of things, I was always in this really bad spot because, you know, let's say Chris moved from Michigan State to Penn State, but he was using our hosting services to build everything out. And, you know, Chris leaves MSU, and so he's not in my group that I support anymore, but yet Chris is at Penn State calling me, asking me, can I have all my assets? And, you know, we have one person who is in our fellows program this spring who has a tenure system position at Florida State University. And it was so nice to be able to have the conversation with her the other day of saying, you know what, all we have to do is file a help ticket, and all your stuff will move with you and we'll figure it out. And you might have to log into a different spot for it, but everything will move for you. And you don't have to worry about that during your first year as an assistant professor while you're trying to figure out where to get your hair cut and go to the dentist. Your digital presence moves with you.
Did you tell her to blog about that too? Definitely blog about the haircut.
I will definitely have to tell her to do that.
That's critical on the graduate student side because, I mean, you know, different from faculty, with graduate students, we, you know, our success depends on them getting out of here.
Right.
That's right. Well, one of the things too, the portability thing is crucial. I mean, I always thought when we even doing UNW blogs early on, WordPress for us, why we went WordPress is because I could say, look, you know, you could take it and host it anywhere or on WordPress.com. It's free. So the portability, thank you for bringing it up. That's huge. One of the things I'm interested in, because you do focus, and quite brilliantly, I'd say, and it's obvious you guys have thought a lot about this, about the question of the individual and that academic presence. But, Kristen, I noticed, you know, Digital Humanities Coordinator, that's a broad scope. And I know a lot of the work Reclaim does, actually, I think one of the reasons Reclaim had some traction is we worked a lot with the Digital Humanities folks from all over. And those projects, often there's the personal presence, but often there's archives, you know, Omega install, Scalar books, you know, JavaScript kind of, you know, Perl, Python things I'd never seen before. So how are you balancing some of the personal individual push for people to get their work out there with maybe bigger projects you might be hosting that are digital humanities, research tools, sites, etc.? Anything there or no?
I don't know if you can hear me. Scott says that my video is frozen.
No, you're so good. It might be for him, but I can see it.
Okay. It's you, Scott. So, we are scaling this up as we go. There have been a few projects so far that have either finished or in the process of being finished or being launched that are actually hosted on Reclaim through different accounts. So we have a digital humanities account actually on Reclaim where I've hosted our symposium conference website, for example, but that's also where we have the digital humanities course sites for, and, you know, for example, one of our courses this semester, the faculty member is having his students work on a group project using an Omeka install where they are digitizing and then visualizing a small collection from our library special collections. So that is all happening on an Omeka install of our kind of DH account. But we also have a faculty member who worked with several people, myself included, and built a Scalar book that's now in the final processes of being put in as a digital book being published through a peer-reviewed press that was created and run on her Scalar install on her Reclaim account. You know, so that was really great to be able to just do that and have it not be a problem and then, you know, not have to worry about it at all. We also have a new project that's starting that will be using Reclaim and probably will be using an Omeka install. That's a joint project funded by the Humanities Without Walls grants that's actually joint with Penn State, incidentally, and some scholars from a variety of other institutions, but the lead ones are MSU and Penn State. And that is going to be, you know, a collaborative work with 37 different scholars and two grad students and two undergrads and me. And we're all going to be using Reclaim to run that. And that option has been really conducive to that type of large scale grant-funded project that's collaborative across institutions where we didn't want any one institution to own it because it's meant to be a sort of a communal thing for this group.
It's
so that's been pretty, that's just embarking. So, but pretty excited to be able to do that. And so that way, if the PI on the project ends up changing in institutions in 5 years, then we don't have to figure out what to do with it. We know what's happening.
It's cool too, because one of the things Chris said earlier, no academic activity without digital artifact, which I love that idea, is you have the personal presence idea, but you also, like you're saying, Kristen, is you have actually faculty who have entire infrastructure that's part of their academic presence, right? And as you mentioned, Scott, that's got to come with them, right? Like if you start building Scalar sites or Omeka sites and WordPress sites, and some people do stuff, name it, that's actually part of your digital presence. But one of the questions I think that leads me to is you're working on the digital presence now, and that's a huge in. Is there a sense that you're going to actually have a whole nother arm that's going to start saying, hey, you need to do research using, you know, search various tools or build a book with Scalar or actually You need JavaScript for doing X, Y, and Z, whatever it would be, three-dimensional virtualizations of something, right? The reproduction of mapping and early American elections. Is that a part where digital humanities starts to become a field that's not simply about presence, possibly about a whole new infrastructure for thinking about how to do research and scholarship? And I'm sorry, I just talked a lot, Kristen. That's all I did. I got excited.
One thing I would say, I mean, this actually brings it back to you a little bit in the sense that, you know, one of the advantages that, so on the positive side, Scott gave, okay, when somebody leaves an institution, yeah, they got to get their assets out of there. The advantage of Reclaim is, okay, you can shift it over, no problem. The advantage of these, you know, 200 and 300 year old universities is that they're going to be around. And so, you know, that's the, so building out huge DH projects on Reclaim is also going to have to depend on you guys being around and having a sustainable model, as well as, you know, which I know you've attended to, making sure that you can get the data in and out of there in the event that you need to. So I think that's a challenge. I mean, we have, Scott and I have been talking about this a lot, even just within the institution. I mean, as you can imagine, there's all of these projects we have going on in the college to try to advance the mission of the college, working with, right now I'm creating a new school of languages. Well, we needed a website that mapped out that process, right? And so we needed to spin that up relatively quickly and bring those and give the faculty a space to see what was happening as it happened. So, you know, there's even within the administrative structure of a place, if you're trying to perform this out loud online and create, use these digital tools to create community, even very local community, it requires both the infrastructure to do it, but then it gets back to the habits that we've been talking about. You know, are faculty really going on there and looking online, and are they actually commenting that way?
One of the trends we've seen, which I'm interested in, it goes to what you were saying, is the archiving thing is huge. I mean, you have a lot of projects, personal projects, and the idea that someone will be a personal archivist of their work is, it's kind of, we can get behind that. Yeah, you have an online presence, you take it with you, and that domain becomes it. So two questions in one, because when I mentioned domain, it brought up another question. The first is, we have a lot of interest from libraries who are providing Omeka archival tools and stuff. And one of the things I've always thought is, how do libraries take the work that's happening in a domains package and then find a way to archive it for the school long term, like you were saying? And the second question is, right now, one of the things we're seeing is a lot of schools are using subdomains. So something like jimgroom.msu.domains. And a lot of online scholarly presence, when you're talking about moving, depends upon a unique domain, like CP Long, right? So I wonder how you all feel about, like, is there a point at which you're like, you've graduated, you've done all the cool stuff, you're in it. Now go get a domain. You buy it, you own it, and then come back. I mean, so there's two questions in there. One about archiving, one about personal domains.
Yeah. Kristen, I'll let you take the archiving one, but on the domain name, we don't force people to get their own domain name at first. You know, we say, sure, you can have netid.msu.domains. And most of them start out that way. But we do really encourage them to start to form that identity around their more unique domain name as soon as they're really ready to and able to. And, you know, it's not, to many, it's a really a daunting task. To those of us on the end of doing it all the time, you know, we see it as very easy, but it's very daunting for someone to think about, well, okay, now I have to register this thing, and what does that mean, and how much does it cost me, and oh, it costs me, I have to pay for it again next year, and you know, all of those things that if you kind of go out and read a lot of the stuff around it, of these issues of ownership, and you're not owning, you're leasing the domain name, and all of those, we talk about a lot of those issues, but yeah, so in that respect, we're not forcing it right away, but we're highly encouraging it and trying to teach people that how that is important in doing that work. Kristen, I'll let you add to that, but certainly the archiving thing is very much in Kristen's area of expertise.
Yeah, so he says that because I'm a librarian. And we've been having very interesting conversations with our own librarians about this. And it's a huge topic in digital humanities is the long-term preservation of digital projects. And that's actually separate from anything that we do with Reclaim, something that we're thinking about anytime Scott or I start working with a faculty member or anyone on a digital project is asking the question of what are your long-term plans with this? And sometimes that takes people aback because they're just starting. But as long as you can think as much as possible from the beginning about what you want from it in terms of, do you want this to be something that you use with a class for a semester that once its functionality has lived until the end of the semester, you're okay with it sort of deprecating over time, and that's fine? Or do you want it to be something that's maintained for the foreseeable future? Well, let's think about what that means so that you can select a tool or customize or not customize as much as you are comfortable being able to maintain in the long term. And so introducing those conversations into the beginning doesn't mean that we're going to solve everything, but at the very least, faculty members or graduate students are a little bit more informed as they go in and make choices. So, often if it's something where you want it to live indefinitely, I sort of almost recommend to people that they don't customize as much in terms of custom CSS or JavaScript, unless they really need to, because then it's up to you to continue to maintain that in the long term. And are you going to have a student that you can pay 5 years down the line to do that specific task, or are you going to want to move on? And maybe it's one, maybe it's the other. So thinking about that as a sort of educative moment, and I think all of this is really just great education for faculty to understand how the internet works more, how servers work, so that they are, able to be more empowered and embodied. I think this world is changing so fast in terms of how we do research, how we do teaching, that it's very easy to find it daunting what you need to know to be able to spin up your own subdomain and start your own course website. And I sat with a faculty member yesterday who is tenured and admits to not being very technology, but is super interested. And we sat and did that, and she took notes, and she knows how to do it now. That's to right. Create a subdomain and create her own course website and everything. And I mean, I think that showing how to do that really helps people feel like all the rest of it is not as overwhelming. But in terms of the long-term archiving part of it, the other thing that I'd like to talk about to faculty, which is sort of related, I'll get there, is Humanities Commons, which is now a huge opportunity for folks in the humanities, and there's some areas in other fields that have something similar. And I talk about that as both a place where you can kind of direct and build your scholarly presence as well, but it also serves as an institute, a subject repository for scholarly works. So it's a place where you can publish your works open access, or put open access published works into this repository so people can access them, or publish your syllabi, perhaps, or publish your data sets if that's what you're doing. And I'm hoping that in the longer term, they're able to figure out ways to start thinking about this issue of digital projects too. So they're not there yet by any means, and that's run by Columbia. Actually, it's run by Columbia University Libraries. So it's not affiliated. It doesn't say Columbia University Libraries, but they're the ones that are actually sort of serving as the receiving body. But you're publishing it, or you're given a DOI for everything that you add in, and it's through Humanities Commons. So that's really where I'm pushing a lot with faculty now, and where I'm putting my own work.
It's interesting, too, because one of the things I've always thought of like that is, if you're doing this work, when we were doing DS-106, which is kind of the prototype for the Domain of One's Own idea, everything people posted on their own site, people were like, well, they're on their own site. It's not even, we didn't have it hosted through Reclaim. Reclaim wasn't even a thing. They're on some other hosting, and when they're done with the class, it goes away. So immediate question we had was, how do we archive it? And RSS aggregation became the key to us still having, not all, but a fair amount of the 70,000 posts or whatever that have been posted in the last 6 years. And it makes me think, like, it sounds like that Humanities Commons is an example of that. Internet Archive is an example of that. Like,
yeah.
How cool would it be to have a place where it's the Michigan Library or MSU Library or whoever says, hey, this can come. This is a post that's RSS or it's a WordPress post. You want to, this is, you know, relevant for us. Send it to the archive. Send it to the Internet Archive, right? Or send it to ours. And the aggregation piece that I talked about earlier with the community at MSU. Like, in some ways, the other part of community and aggregation to get it in one place is it's also archiving. And so that's a very interesting nut we're trying to break right now. And we're doing this early version with Georgetown is what does it mean to aggregate various things from different sites around the community? And that can be through someone like Columbia with the Humanities Commons. It could be at Michigan State's library, because I do think libraries in some ways are central to this conversation.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up. So, I mean, so the Humanities Commons, and Kristen knows more about the details of this than I do. I think the Columbia's hosting it, but it's coming out through MLA Commons and then therefore through Mellon, a big Mellon grant. And the, and the sustainability model for them is that they're going to be supported by scholarly societies in the humanities coming together to support them in an ongoing way. The challenge, so I've been in this kind of from both sides. So at Penn State, I was really an advocate for their repository that they spun up themselves, and they've been a lot of commitment, a lot of energy into spinning up this repository, scholarly repository, which I then became kind of an advocate for. I was trying to be in on the ground floor of that, and ScholarSphere, as it's called, and I, of course, I uploaded all my stuff up there, and I got it all up there, and then I left Penn State. And I thought, oh my gosh, this stuff out of there. Like, I mean, exactly. It's still there and it's part of, and it's good because that's part of, I mean, right, Kristen? That's part of good librarianship and archiving is to have multiple copies, right, in different places. So I've got that. But meanwhile, Michigan State made a different decision. It was like, we're not going to do repositories at all. So when I got here, I said, where's the repository? What's up with this? What's the deal? And no, we had a long conversation. We never got around to it. Then Humanities Commons pops up and I say, well, there's my repository. Why would Michigan State need to, you know, pop up a repository? We've got Humanities Commons. It's got a model, hopefully, that we can support through societies, through the Mellon Foundation. That's a big deal. We can do it that way. And then, of course, we've done, as Kristen said, trying to encourage faculty to put their material up there too, because that is it is public and it is got the archive quality.
And thinking about it as something that's in addition to your, you know, personal website that you're hosting, right? So that's in addition to your Twitter or whatever else, but it's a space where you can deposit things that are, you know, given a DOI. So then you can go into ORCID and add it to your list of works, and it's, you know, equal to the other works that are automatically added in there. And the other thing is, you mentioned archive.org and the Internet Archive, and that's something that we talk about when we're explaining to faculty about, you know, make sure that your website can be, if you're comfortable, crawled by the Internet Archive. And when we're working with faculty, we're putting up images or videos. And so, for example, for that Scalar project that I mentioned, all of the videos that are in that project are actually hosted on archive.org. And then they're shown through Scalar.
Nice. I mean, that's really, for me, a big part of this is I always thought that the work we were doing at Mary Washington was about the history of Mary Washington. And I think with UMW blogs, like Penn State blogs and many others, like, there's an archive of a very interesting moment in academia's history, right? Like the rise of social media. And how did we manage that? And that's an archive we still have. I mean, hundreds of thousands of posts at this point. And I'm very interested in the preservation of that. And I always want to think, like, one of the things I was thinking is, why don't we have a place when you go onto your personal site, wherever it is through MSU domains, msu.edu, that is a place as you're uploading this, is there any other place you want to put it? Like our library, like the Internet Archive, like the Humanities Commons, like just simple ways to follow that good recommendation to put it in many places with appropriate metadata so that it can live on.
Yeah.
And it's funny that the domains provides us a place to organize some of that now, right? Institutionally, even if it's not centrally controlled by the institution.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, going back to the point that you made earlier, which was that, you know, we are living through this transformative moment in the history of scholarship. And I know Kristen will be able to point us to areas in medieval scholarship that had similar kinds of things that they went through and how they responded to that. You know, we have, I mean, I feel like in a way there's a deep kind of responsibility. I like to tell the story of how my first year of graduate school at the New School for Social Research in philosophy, which, you know, was about to embark on this very old way of doing scholarship, namely getting in the library and reading, you know, the great history of philosophy and trying to add a note or two to that great history, was the same year that the World Wide Web was established. And so now I'm, you know, and of course we kind of were educated in without seeing, I mean, we didn't know the impact of that at all. And so now there's a generation of us who were educated in this older way of doing scholarship, who can bring some of the good habits associated with that, say close reading habits and other kinds of things, into this new way of doing scholarship. And if we're smart about it, we won't be allergic to the affordances that the new forms of scholarship give us, but we'll also won't forget the values of the older forms of scholarship. But, you know, those of us who are gone, who can remember a time before there was an internet, that's going to be a whole different world that we have to make sure inherit some of these habits and values and practices.
I've held you all against your will, as I can see from the images here, for an hour now. And I'm just now more excited about talking to you than I was even before I talked to you, because you are a well-oiled machine of a group in terms of thinking about how to do this, how to frame this, who's managing what. And so it makes me doubly excited for what you'll be bringing to Domain 17 in June. So I want to thank you all, Kristen, Scott, Chris, for taking time out of your busy schedules to sit down and talk with us on DS106 Radio, It's for Life, but also just to be doing the awesome work you're doing, sharing it, and then hopefully building it, you know, creating it and sharing it with the folks at Domain 17. It's just amazing. So thank you all very much. I this is probably as good a time to stop as ever, because I think we could go on for another couple of hours pretty cleanly, right?
And I want to make sure that we thank you guys and the other collaborators that we have, because part of the reason that our machine works so well is that we have the fantastic support from you guys, where when something does go wrong, I'm able to get that. I'm on the phone with Tim or somebody else, or you, Jim, really quickly, or email.
People usually say Tim first. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because I never tell people when I'm working on it that I'm usually going to have an answer by the time we're done talking about the question. But
yeah.
But it's so nice to have that. And then I don't know if Adam's I don't think Adam's still on here, but or maybe he is.
I wish he was.
But,
yeah.
But you know, his team at Oklahoma has been super. They've been great collaborators for me in terms of trading ideas, documentation. Kristen and I had a call with NYU, and so we found the other institutions that are working on this have been great partners as well in helping us to refine our model and that. So I think it's, you know, we've got some ideas, but we certainly are reliant on other collaborators for making it work.
Well, one of the things we didn't even get to, and hopefully we'll get to at Domain 17, talking about Adam brought it up, is I know when he was coming on and he wanted to be on this call, was one of the things is a lot of things has been said, like it could be done at a small school, it could be done, but couldn't be done at a scale like Oklahoma. And then when they blew it out of the water, people were like, wait a second. And then MSU is doing something similar. So there's a whole conversation, I think, that we can have about what does this mean for both a small liberal arts school like UMW and a huge public land grant like MSU or University of Oklahoma. So there's still so much more to talk about. So you're right. I mean, and it's funny, we don't know who's talking to each other between the schools because Tim and I are kind of like just, you know, trying to keep the pieces together. And people are just, because they know what they do, and it's an open source, most of the stuff we're doing is an open source system anyone can kind of hack into and build. So that's cool. It's very cool to know that.
I mean, I think it's a great indication that when you do something authentically for the right reasons with a real purpose and a sense of what's right about the scholarship or the endeavor, people who get it will come and find you and will find each other. And that's just so, to me, so heartening because, you know, I've seen it happen. And that's you know, I know I'm going to need that as we move forward for the next phase. I love this idea of aggregation. I think there's all kinds of things to think about. And it's great to have the trust and the relationships that we've established now to build on as we think about what's possible.
Cool. Well, you all rule. I'm a big fan. I don't know if you knew that. Big fan. Okay, you have to say, before we all leave, we have to say it. I mean, you don't have to, but if you did, that would be nice. DS106 Radio for Life in unison on three. Right. Okay? 1, 2, 3. DS106 Radio for Life. Don't look for a job in radio. That's all I have to say. Thanks, guys. You rule.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.